As long as the email's out. So.
All right. So, Chair Heppner.
Here.
Deputy Chair Roberts.
I am here.
Legislator Gavaris.
Present.
Legislator Levine.
Here.
And Legislator Ronk. You have 4 members present, 1 absent.
All right, can I have a motion for discussion on proposed local law number 2 of 2022?
Make that motion, Mr. Chair.
All right, motion made by Legislator Roberts, seconded by Gavaris. All right, so we'll get started in your packets with proposed PDF that's titled Proposed Local Law Number 2. Of 2022 ethics law with flags, all caps. So that is where the most recent version that includes the flags and red lines that we were still discussing as of the end of December. Please be patient with me. You know, this was Tracy's role, now Chair Bartels. So these are, especially this kind of stuff, are big shoes to fill. So don't hesitate to step in if, you know, I forgot something or I'm missing something. And as we get going, so I'm going to ask Clerk Mahler, can you share your screen just so everyone also can follow that way? And we'll just go, you know, there's not that much left. There's just a few, some of them are just a little bit more intricate than others, but hopefully we can come to a consensus and cross more off and then go into the other appendixes. So not that one, that's appendix B, the flagged local law. All right, cool. So let's go to our first flag. This is on page 3 of the actual public law. And this is the county's attorney's office has previously expressed concerns that language does not expressly prohibit bribes. Members of the previous Laws and Rules Committee, as well as I believe both majority and legislative minority council, disagreed with the concern, as bribes are prohibited by penal law that already exists.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please go ahead. And again, with it up, it's hard to see, so just kind of speak out. I trust everyone to be civil.
Thank you. With this flag here and the remaining flags, do you want to talk about them as we go along, or do you
want to? Yeah, I think we take them one by one, because there's not that many. Let's see if we can alleviate them.
I think we should ignore this flag.
Yep, I think we can, if I'm good with it, if the rest of the committee is good with it, we can cross this flag out.
Yeah, we can eliminate.
Legislator Levine, you good?
Yes.
Yep. So let's strike that, Clerk Mahler. All right, going on page 3, but it goes into page 4, section K, titled immediate family member / member of household. There is a definition previously suggested from Legislator Gavaris to replace the current definition. The definition proposed by Legislator Gavaris is on the top of page 4. I don't know, Legislator Gavaris, if you've had more thoughts on this, or if anyone would like to discuss that definition.
I know nothing new, but there is something that ties back into this that to another flag for later on under sibling. So if we do agree to this change, we have to tie it with the other one down the line.
Mm-hmm. My one concern with this language was the term when I was going through it the other day was alternatively, a de facto relative may be an individual or who has simply developed a relative-like bond. I just think that we might be getting a little bit broad on that one.
Yeah, this was actually taken from something in the federal level. This was not me creating this from scratch. This was almost a copy and paste. And it was to address situations where you have, you know, the adopted parent who's really not a parent. They're not legal in that sense. It, you know, there could be a cohabitation setting at a house where the couple are not married, but for all intents and purposes, that male figure is the child's father. Mm-hmm. And you know.
I see what you're saying. Any other members of the committee have any thoughts or comments on this?
Jonathan?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Are we going to get to the point in the future where possible is we're going to have to come back and define this, or somebody else is going to have to define this?
I would ask that of council.
It's a point of order. This is a definition.
Right. We are in the definitional section.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it's very broad. I mean, what's the definition of somebody who's to say they developed a relative-like bond? You know, is that our opinion? Is that their opinion? Is that just the way it is?
Can I speak on this, Mr.
Chair? Yeah, please go ahead, Chris. So
I tend to agree with Legislator Roberts. I certainly understand the intent of the definition, but from a legal perspective, it's incredibly broad and very difficult to have any kind of real understanding, at least in my opinion, from the way I read it, as to what, where the line is drawn, I guess, as it's written.
Chair Hefner, I just add to that. I think the last sentence there is there on purpose because it actually ties it in. I think that's sort of the litmus test there.
Mm-hmm. Council Gordon, did you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on this. And
sure, please go ahead.
I'm in agreement. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. There's actually a word here that we're not focusing on, which is quite important, and that's the word include. The word include itself is ambiguous because the way I think it was meant, which is one way to interpret it, is that it is the word there means this is what is included and nothing else is included. That's what the intention is here, I think. But it doesn't necessarily mean that. It could also it could mean very often it means something what's called without limitation. So it includes these and then goes to somewhere else. And what I would suggest is maybe a two-part thing here. Certain people are automatically included, siblings, parents, children, including adoptive children, et cetera. And then given the concern that this amendment or that Legislator Guevara's suggestion would be, there are other people who we wouldn't want to include categorically, but you know could provide a very significant conflict of interest. And that could be a question of fact for the ethics board as it comes up. And so what you might say as an example, I'm just throwing this out there for whatever you guys want to do, is you say shall include without limitation, a spouse, et cetera. Anybody who's not in this defined category would be a matter of fact that would be required to be proven before the ethics committee.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah, Chair Hefner.
Yeah, please go ahead, Council.
Yeah, just, you know, from a bird's eye view perspective, an important thing or quality for legislation like this to have is it should be as plain as possible, as predictable as possible, so that a layperson that's reading it would have a good sense as to what the parameters of it are, right? Mm, and totally. So the existing language kind of does that because it says it includes a spouse. Well, we know what a spouse is, right? It includes an unemancipated child or person claimed on a return. Well, that's very easily verifiable. Once you start getting into definitions that include maybe like a mentor or a best friend or what have you, it becomes very gray and hard to interpret and apply. So I think just for clarity's sake and for predictability's sake for persons that are laypersons that are referring to this, I think you want to err on the side of specificity. And I think, you know, that's what the existing language does. So that That's just kind of my, and I think maybe that's what Legislator Roberts was getting at is, you know, are we going to need an advisory opinion to interpret this language? And you probably would. So that would be my suggestion, would be to err on the side of specificity.
Any other comments from members of the committee or those joining us?
If I could just make a note, Chair.
Yep.
Sure. I tend to agree with Minority Counsel with respect to the clarity comment. And we could even reference tax dependent status. I don't know if you mentioned that, or degrees of relationship, you know, meaning father, you know, son, stepson. You know, we could even cite that, but I think it has to be clear here or else it's just too broad of a brush to leave out there open for interpretation. It would really just cause problems, I think, if it's not clear.
Thank you. Legislator Guevara, I think I saw you go off mute.
Yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any real interest in moving forward this, so we can take it out. I'll just, the reason why this got brought up in the first place is even through our own legislators, we have this kind of scenario where there's a cohabitation arrangement, but no legal, there's no marriage license, there's nothing. And I just see, you know, situations where that could be a potential for somebody to skirt the ethics law, where mm-hmm. they wouldn't be considered if we go with the strict definition of immediate family members.
Legislator Rock.
Thanks. Sorry, I came into this a little bit late. But I like the first sentence in Legislator Guevara's, you know, suggested, you know, language. I think that the second two are what counsel on, you know, on both sides has raised, you know, both Counsel Ragucci and Minority Counsel. You know, I feel like I would be comfortable with the first sentence ending with the word person. I feel like that's specific enough for me if we were going to move forward on it.
I could live with that.
I don't know what everyone else's thoughts are.
Can you show everyone where that, put that, plug that in, Jay?
The clerk just highlighted it.
But I'm into the actual definition as. I'm good with that if council's good with it.
No objection.
Any objection from any committee members or comments from other folks that have joined us?
I mean, I just think that Legislator Guevara makes a good point that.
Yeah, I definitely see the point he's making. Yeah. So I think that's a strong suggestion. I definitely hadn't seen that. All right, so if everyone's in favor, we can cross this flag off the list and move on. Any opposed?
Sorry,
no opposition.
We've knocked two off so far, folks. Let's keep going.
I think Legislator Erner had his hand up there.
Legislator Erner, please go ahead.
Well, just in the spirit of the last part of the conversation, when we say basic needs or regular care, is that going to also need an interpretation?
Probably.
Yeah, it may. But I think that's more
the purpose. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ken.
I was going to say that's the purpose of advisory opinions, is that you can't button up every eventuality. So you have to, you know, have certain areas where you leave it open to interpretation. And that's why we have the ethics board's ability to give advisory opinions. I know we're going to have some conversation later on, language to clear up a current advisory opinion that I'm going to have some comments on. So,
yeah. And I think per what counsel said, this is, you know, for the, you know, the non-legal person reading this, I think it, you know, it definitely is more, a little bit more understandable to where it'll still flag for them that they might need to get an advisory opinion and be understandable to them.
Legislator Heppner, if I could just note, I see that, like, other than Clerk Mahler, I'm the only woman here. I don't have a vote. And I just want to point out that caring, you know, a lot of the caring for basic needs is done by women. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say that. I think you guys are being incredibly sensitive about that, the whole thing. But as a woman who lives with a partner for 18 years that I'm not married to, I feel like the onus is on me to identify the conflicts that may arise. And I agree, and an advisory opinion could be sought, but I did just want to mention that for the record. I think it's a little, it's unfortunate that Laws and Rules does not have a female legislator.
Thank you. That's up to the female chair of the legislature there, March. So just throwing that out there.
Can we go back to the shared screen?
So I'm clearly the only one who lost internet. So yeah. I'm going to make Chair Heppner the co-chair of this meeting, and
it defaulted to the assistant county attorney, which was funny.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Are you back in business?
Back in business.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I'm glad you're back, Jay, because we brought the number of women on the Zoom up to two now.
Counselor, so you can go ahead and cross out that the flag on page four.
And we're leaving this as the addition here.
Yep, just add a period.
Add after a period. Person, right, that was my only comment.
And then you can.
We strive for grammatic clarity.
Yeah. Okay, and then going on, this was a question: does the language provide a loophole for one or few employees? Has the addition of any/all of the above resolved the potential problem? I believe this was a flag from Chair Bartels at the time. I mean, counsel, any would include any or all, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
We can just say the benefit of any county.
Any includes all.
Yep.
Perfect.
That's also the phrase I was, any includes all. I'm comfortable with that if the rest of the members are, or unless there's any other comments or concerns from other participants.
I'm in favor of moving on.
Let's move on.
No objection.
This had been put in after our last time we went over this in December, the previous committee. It was at our request, this language was added. Means any brother, sister, half-brother, or half-sister, stepbrother, or stepsister, and equivalently related non-binary persons. I think we can just say, and related non-binary persons.
You don't like the word equivalently?
I just don't think it's necessary unless you disagree.
I'm just glad
we have the language in. So as long as folks
are brother, sister, half brother, half sister, stepbrother, stepsister. I think I don't know. I mean, I'll lean on the attorneys. I feel like equivalently needs to be there because that if you don't include the word equivalently,
you're saying between biological half step. So
I mean, I just think that, you know, any related person would then qualify any.
Okay, I'm good with it. I'm convinced. Clerk of Council Iguchi.
Would it make better sense and more grammatical sense to change and to or?
Binary, if you've got a nephew that's non-binary, mm-hmm. at that point, it just says related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should say, change the and to or, I think.
You're happening. This was the other
thing
I was referring to earlier. Is it, and this is a question for counsel, is this even necessary, really? Because the only place sibling is mentioned is in the definition now of de facto relative, and it's used as an example. It's not necessarily the definition. The word sibling doesn't appear anywhere else in our ethics law. it just links back to the definition under de facto relative.
So the question is it necessary?
To even define sibling?
Yeah, because there's nowhere in the law itself. I did a search and it doesn't exist anywhere except for in the tagged part for under de facto. It says de facto relative, parentheses, parent, child, sibling, et cetera, close parentheses. So.
But isn't it, my understanding is it is listed in one of the appendixes. I don't know if it's the disclosure form or one of the other appendixes.
That could be. I didn't check that.
I just checked the disclosure form and did not find it.
I remember seeing it. I just remember seeing it in one of the appendixes, but I'm happy to double check. And if it's not, we could take it out for sure.
I'll search in the meantime. We can move on, but I'll search.
One of the benefits of naming, of defining sibling, is that it makes it clear that it does include step siblings. And I think,
that's a good point.
If you just say sibling, it's not necessarily considered step.
Yep. So, so as the language currently reads, are there any objections? Otherwise, we're good and can move on.
No objection.
All right, let's take away that flag and move on to the next. All right, section 4. This is the Board of Ethics. Obviously, the flag is that the executive office position is that the exec has the sole authority to appoint candidates. We've obviously discussed this extensively. I don't know, counsel, if you want to just give a review for the new folks on why we feel comfortable in this position.
Sure. And if I could just do a little historical context, that the original draft of this law, I believe, this section was borrowed from the Orange County ethics law. And it was artfully drafted, I think, by our minority counsel in the original draft, and then has subsequently been amended. In Orange County, as they have a very similar appointment process as we've set up in this provision. My understanding is that has not been successfully challenged at this point. And certainly there's been no finding that violates state law. And I have not found a decision that would find that this would violate state law.
Anyone else? Seeing no one else has any issues on that flag or comments, I believe we can remove that flag and move on. And then the next one is actually Legislator Ushita, who is with us today, had noted that there's nothing in the law that requires members to wait until all six appointments are made before appointing the seventh member. I believe that doesn't seem like it would be something that would be hard to fix in terms of. And could we just say,
I think that if I remember correctly, his point about nothing that requires the members to wait for all six appointments is if, if we didn't make our appointments fast enough, the executive's appointments could then appoint the seventh by a majority vote. Was that his concern?
I believe so.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Basically, that a quorum, once you have reached a quorum threshold, in any sense, you could appoint the last person. And this might be resolved by the fact that the appointment of the last person wouldn't diminish the ability of the other, parties to appoint their people. And once they do, if the balance of power changes, that last seat could be replaced because the voting balance has now changed.
Is the goal to ensure that all six appointments are made before the seventh?
No, the goal is to ensure that the body can't act in a lopsided way without being vested in the manner that's laid out here.
I mean, we could then say that, the board may not appoint the seventh member until the until all six members are appointed. I mean, it's
We could say, and one of whom shall be nominated by the Board of Ethics once all six members are seated.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would certainly incentivize keeping the board full because the board itself would be asking for those appointments so that they can further fill their ranks, which I think is
right there,
something that we've run into with seats being left open.
Mm-hmm. So do you see where that is, Jay? Kind of right in the middle, and one of whom shall be nominated by the Board of Ethics.
Contingent upon...
Once all six members have been seated. All right. Does that satisfy folks?
Yes,
works for me.
Works for you, legislator, you should tell. I thought I saw it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, cool. Any objections or concerns? Seeing none, let's get rid of this flag and move on. We're now on page 8 of the actual law. A local law entitled Ulster County Ethics Law. The flag was concern expressed that the requirement to appoint an elected official may limit options for appointment if when the stipulation is not already satisfied.
So just to interrupt, when we delete flags, what I sent you all and what you're all referencing, our page numbers are going to get wonky. So we're on 8 on the screen, but it was on 7 in your email. So if you're following online, Chair Heppner has the accurate page number, but if you're following on the email I sent you, you're just going to need to like continue to scroll.
Thank you. And again, so this flag was concern expressed that the requirement to appoint an elected official may limit options for appointment if when that stipulation is not already satisfied.
So this the concern, I think, was that, a appointing authority, being the chair, the minority leader, the executive may be pigeonholed into appointing a elected official if, that's the only option that they have because there's no other elected official or employee. I'm comfortable with it. It wasn't a concern I had.
Yeah, I think unfortunately that that's just the reality. I mean, personally, I feel like that's actually one of the easiest. Would be one of the easiest positions to fill.
Yep.
Just in honesty, but I don't have any strong concerns at this point. And there's nothing saying that there can't be two elected officials on it, right?
No, it just says at least one.
Yeah, so if, the minority and the chair both have an elected official they want to appoint, they can most certainly both appoint that elected official.
So the next flag, as I saw, unless we're going to continue on that.
No, I think let's move on.
So this one, I believe, was one of the chair's concerns. I don't have the concern because like every other board, there's holdover provisions.
Yeah, this one isn't high on my concern list.
Almost all of our boards expired December 31st.
Mm-hmm. I have no issue leaving it as is, unless anyone else does.
Kev?
Yeah, Jonathan, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
I'm just looking at the 5-year terms. I don't know if we talked about this last year or not, but 5-year term seems kind of long for this position. specifically since they're being appointed by specific members of us and the county executive. The county executive has a four-year term. Minority leader, majority leader, and the chair, you know, that's a two-year term. I mean, we're saddling future governments with a five-year appointment. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to reinvent this whole thing now, but I think 3 years would be long enough.
I think we had discussed, you can see what was bolded, I believe was discussed. When we go back, the member nominated by the majority serve for 3 years.
Like I said, if everybody's good,
staggering.
Yeah, but that's a staggering part. But after the staggering is over, we're still stuck with 5 years. And if everybody's good with 5 years, I'm good. I'm just bringing it up. It kind of concerns me at this point.
I understand where you're coming from, and I'd prefer, you know, a shorter term. But, you know, I just feel like for the purposes of staggering, I think that's how we ended up at five.
Mm-hmm. That's how I remember the conversation.
Okay.
Okay, any other comments or issues? Well, with that, let's take out that flag and move on.
Well, we're burning through it. I love it.
Flag, add language to explicitly permit the county attorney to provide assistance. So currently, it clearly states that the Board of Ethics may engage outside counsel as necessary and as provided for within the designated budget appropriations, but that legislative counsel and minority counsel may not serve as such outside counsel.
I don't particularly want the county attorney to provide assistance. The county attorney is appointed by the county executive. I'd prefer that they get outside counsel personally.
Personally, in the way I look at this, if we're really trying to have a true independent ethics board, I see no reason why the county attorney wouldn't be included with legislative and minority counsel. If what we're really trying to achieve is independence.
Yeah, I agree.
And if that means we do have to provide some additional funding in that budget line, I think it's for a worthy cause. For the sake of the public and, you know, and county government.
Agreed.
One sec, Jay is just making the notes. Does anyone else have any, in the meantime, does anyone else have any comments or concerns on that one? All right, seeing none with those changes, we'll move on. I think this is where we have a nice flow of no flags. Because I believe a total we were at 33, we might be down to 32 pages now.
All right. So this is 16 here, and in your packets, it's on 17.
Mm-hmm. And this is Part B, recusal by officers and employees. This is what we left in December as a quote unquote small flag to require some sort of notification of recusal to supervisor. And then had been requested for the language as reads in the employee code of conduct for recusal language. And that reads, quote, not allow any competing personnel or professional interest to influence decisions or actions taken on behalf of the county. I don't remember this flag as well. I don't know if anyone else has any additional information.
On the small flag?
Yep.
I believe that this was Comptroller Gallagher brought up and said that if one of her employees needed to recuse, she would want notification.
True. But feel free to ignore it. I'm fine. I have my own internal set of requirements, so I can impose that requirement. Mm-hmm.
I think it's better off personally with, you know, internal office, you know,
reporting structures
rather than to put it into the law itself.
I don't disagree. And if you're comfortable, Comptroller Gallagher, then I think we can move on unless there's any other objections from committee members. All right, with that, let's move on. Keep going.
This is 23 in the emailed packet, 22 here.
And I believe, so this is section K, or sorry, section L, currently reads bidding by officers, employees on county owned real property acquired by tax sale. This, and the note is that this section was stricken with a note that council would review to ensure that there are no conflicts with negotiating contracts, GML, and public officers law, section 74, per the comptroller. Council, have you had the ability to review and discuss with Council Pascal?
I have reviewed. I haven't discussed with Council Pascal, but I can just note generally what the law says. And he obviously can contribute if he deems it appropriate. Section 801 of the GML, you know, as articulated and interpreted by certain opinions and cases that I've found, specifically prohibits officers from bidding on property acquired from tax, you know, through the tax sale process. There's a case, Rose v. Eichhorst, which I found, which specifically identified this issue. And it seemed pretty clear to me that it is prohibited.
Okay, so with that, if it was stricken, we would also, I think we had talked about, there would be no need for this in Appendix D, which we haven't gotten to, but.
I'm comfortable with that.
Any other objection?
Council said no, but I would like to, Councilor Gucci, if you could forward on that information, because this just seems, it doesn't track with the same logic as other situations, which we're currently, myself and Chair Bartels, are facing. It's almost in the same, it's the same logic. So I just don't get it.
Sure, I'm happy to forward that decision.
Thank you.
Okay, any issues on this actual section?
So to be clear, section L is remaining stricken. That's the opinion of council.
Right, officers and employees are not permitted to acquire property from the tax sale process at the county.
All right, so with that, no objections, we can move on. What page are we on?
We are on 24 here, 25 in the emailed packet.
Okay. This is section C. Any person who shall become a candidate for the office of an elected official of Ulster County, the disclosure form shall be filed by the candidate within 7 days after the filing of the nominating petitions of said candidate. The flag was, how does this happen? Because as we all know, as folks that have gone through this process, we've never received that envelope in the mail. As if, and you know, I've thought about this, I've asked some questions to see how, you know, on the state level, candidates are obligated to do this. But it's facilitated by JCOP. JCOP personally sends out those packets. So essentially, the way it would be facilitated if we were actually going to do it would potentially be the ethics board would be responsible for sending them out. Currently, they are dispersed, you know, personnel sends them to the clerk of the legislature, the clerk of the legislature distributes it to us. I'm sure they send them to you, clerk comptroller. And then once they're all collected, they go to the ethics board for review. So this is a very interesting situation. I don't really know how we want to try and facilitate. If anyone has any ideas, because also though, if we're not doing it and we're just relying on you know, obviously we all file our forms annually, you know, as elected officials, but obviously it's not happening as candidates. So I'm curious what all of your thoughts would be on this.
I mean, yeah, the personnel office already sends them out. Maybe we just say the form shall be distributed by the personnel, by the Ulster County Personnel Office.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could, you know, say the form shall be posted conspicuously on the county website, and then it's up to the candidate to do it.
That's not a bad idea either. I mean, we could also leave that up to personnel. I mean, I think personnel could do that either way. They just have personnel has to make the form available. Correct?
I'm fine with that. I mean, I'm fine with either way. I mean,
yeah, you know, I think that's the cleanest way to do it.
The form shall be made available by the Ulster County Personnel Department.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to make sure the Board of Elections knows? I mean,
so I don't believe on the state level the Board of Elections has anything to do with the process.
They're accepting the petitions, right? So how? Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
No, I believe that Jacob distributes the...
I think it's the LEC.
Yeah. But once the petitions are filed, then they respond. But we can notify the BOE, but the BOE should, you know, be aware, you know.
I don't think that, you know, we've discussed this. I don't think that we have the BOE distribute a financial form though.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the cleanest way to do it is personnel, just because they're already the ones organizing it elsewhere. Unfortunately, it's just an added, you know, burden to them, but it's something that should be being done that hasn't been.
Yeah.
Any person shall be any
Mr. Chair.
John, Kevin's got something to say.
Oh yeah, please go ahead, and then Legislator Erna. Sorry, I was reading the thing.
That's okay. I'm just wondering why we even need C. I mean, why does a candidate have to fill out a disclosure form when they haven't done it for any time in the past? What are we trying to prove?
Isn't that in our current law?
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't been getting done.
Well, doesn't mean we shouldn't.
Doesn't mean we should either.
I'm pretty ambivalent, but what say everybody else?
Legislator Erna, do you have your hand raised?
Yeah, but if the committee wants to weigh in on the question first, I can wait.
Is it on this question?
Well, it was on the general question of this item, but not on the specific question as to whether you're going to keep it in there now.
Oh, yeah, no, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Just to the comptroller's point, some kind of communication between Board of Elections, either state or local, and personnel, just informing who is running and who would have this responsibility. Just for example, I ran for the first time and I didn't know I had this responsibility until just now.
Neither did I, trust me.
Neither did I.
I ran for the first time before the ethics law was adopted. So
now you're just aging yourself.
I am.
Any other thoughts from the committee? I mean, I lean more towards, well, go ahead, Ken.
I was going to say that, I mean, we could say we have to clean up the language because I was reading the first sentence and the second sentence don't make sense together yet. But I would say that we could have the Board of Elections provide a list of candidates to the personnel office within 7 days, and then we could make the filing within 14 days.
I'm good with that.
Mr. Chairman, the only potential question I would have is in regards to the political calendar, the timeline of petition filing for candidates on, party lines is different than if somebody was going to run an independent campaign and file independent signatures. So is it going to be listed to have, two separate times that the Board of Elections is going to have to report to personnel with a list of candidates? Because, the first time that they send over the list of candidates to personnel, somebody who decides to file independent petitions as an independent candidate probably wouldn't be on that list. So I don't know if we just wait until the entire petitioning process is over or do it twice.
You're on mute, Ken. Ken, we can't hear you. Ken.
Did you mute me on purpose?
Yeah, because for some reason before we couldn't hear you, and I was just trying to flag it for you so you didn't waste your energy. But we couldn't hear you at all before, so now we can. Yeah, we can hear you.
I was just saying that, I was babbling and then Jay fixed it. So, okay. the designating and or nominating petitions, I think, fixes Legislator Levine's concern.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
I'm comfortable with this. Does anyone else have any concerns?
So do you want to make the provision for the Board of Elections to provide personnel within the, obviously that's a note, I'll make it English.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And again, nowadays it should be a very easy task. That's our, it's something that's already created in a document that's literally just shareable.
And with their new offices, it should make it all the easier. I haven't talked about it in a few weeks, John.
Moving on. What else do we have here in my notes? We're getting close.
Council has his hand up. This next flag is page 27 here, 28 in the email.
Yeah, Council, go ahead.
And I hate to do this, but there is another proposed change that Minority Council and I had discussed back on page 17, and it relates to the positioning of a comma. But it is actually a critical difference.
Are you and Minority Council in opposition on the positioning of the comma?
As often is the case, we are in harmony on this issue.
So at that point, I move that, by unanimous consent, we accept the comma.
Yeah. So please note to Jay where the comma. Let's move forward, and then you can tell Jay where the comma needs to be.
It's under C representation. Okay, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Agree on it. We don't want any negative commas.
No.
Is it an Oxford comma?
I don't think so. Just a regular comma.
All right. Fair enough.
The language highlighted is provided the multiple violations of the county ethics law arise from the same common nucleus of fact that shall be deemed a single violation for the purpose of the imposition of a civil penalty. This was highlighted for further discussion for those who are newer to this. I think this was based on the conversation that what we wanted to avoid, which we had seen action taken in the past, where an individual could violate one ethics law, but because they spoke on it, say for something, they spoke on it and they shouldn't have spoken on it, but they spoke on it in caucus, committee, and then on the floor, that then they could be charged three times for the same violation. That's something we were trying to avoid. So is there any further discussion? I mean, I know the arising from the same common nucleus of fact is a little bit interesting wordsmith, but you know, it gets to the point.
Seems like common protection against double jeopardy to me.
Yeah. Counselor Iguchi?
No legal objection. I think it makes sense.
I'm good if the folks are good.
I'm fine.
Everyone's good?
We're good.
All right, let's move on. If that wasn't, I think that was was that the last one?
It might be the last flag that we had, but then are we going to talk about
that? Yeah, that's the last flag we had. What was your next question?
Are we going to talk briefly about the new concern that was brought up by Chair Bartels?
Which one was that? I got to
laugh. That was the, conflict of interest language, or is that going by the wayside?
I don't have, do you know what section that was?
Iguchi had worked on some language, was my understanding.
I wasn't provided any new information on that.
I think actually, I believe Minority Counsel and I did come up with some proposed language a couple weeks back. Jay, did you?
I don't support the change. That's why I wanted to bring it up if we were going to talk about it.
The chair did not flag it for me.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm fine not moving forward on it then. That would actually please me.
Yeah, I can't even speak to it because I don't know what we're speaking to. So
it was pretty much changing a conflict of interest to not have any law of general application apply to a conflict of interest. It had to do with the advisory opinion on the good cause eviction law.
Okay, well, again, because of the timing of this, we'll have next committee meeting. So when she's back from being away, if she flags that's something, we can bring that up. But let's just keep trying to get through what we do have in front of us, if that's all right.
Yep.
All right. So you do have before you a number of appendix documents, the first being appendix document number 2. This is your standard. This is the annual statement of financial ethics disclosure form. So far, where you can see it, where it's in bold, like I think it's just 2. And then what was it again, Jay? It was essentially it's just
number updated. 3. I don't have it. I'm getting it. I think I just got excited just about how quickly you're moving. You added form. 3 to. The question that no one gets right, that no one discloses their county salary under other income, which is now number 4. So you all wanted a separate section added just to speak to county income. So that's number 3.
Yep.
The numbers have then been shifted to accommodate new 3. The term, immediate family member or member of household has been changed throughout to reflect the changes that you made in the definition section. And then 10A was added to accommodate the exemptions of gift section that you made in section 5F for complementary attendance at functions. So really the only changes in here besides the ministerial definition consistencies or to 3 and then this 10A.
I have no objection with any of those.
No. Legislator Gavaris, do you have your hand raised?
Yeah, the Councilor Gucci had his hand before me, but he put it down. I have to jump off. I just had a quick question if Council could explain on attachment D, appendix C, section 5F. Can you explain that, what that's trying to say, because I'm completely spinning in circles over that one.
Sorry, appendix B, section 5F.
C is in Charles, I'm sorry.
Oh, C.
Right there on the screen, Chris.
Okay. I was trying to find my hard copy here. But... Jay, could you just expand it a little bit? It's a little tiny. So in general terms, judicial notice is when a court takes note or notice of a given fact in a case. For example, a date or an address could be a piece of information that is given what's called judicial notice. And this provision says official notice, just like similar to judicial notice, may be taken of all facts of which judicial notice may be taken and of other facts within the specialized knowledge of the board. So it is apparently imparting the same powers of judicial notice onto official notice regarding knowledge of the board that the board deems fit to have official notice.
Okay, I get it.
Does that make sense? Or
it's convoluted, but I understand it now.
Sorry, I was trying to
the difference between the official and the judicial. I understand now. All right, I apologize. I do have another meeting. I have to start right now. So
thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Chair Heppner, if I could just speak to Appendix A for a second. I just wanted to note that the Constituent Services Navigation Director, Project Director position is not identified in IS, and it is a new set of, you know, sort of a new division within county government. It's up to you guys whether you want to recommend that position be added, but I did note that it wasn't included.
But 1 second. So everyone was good with Appendix A? I mean, with the financial, yeah, what I think it was.
Affirmative. I'm fine with the, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So with this, can you repeat that one more time? Sorry, Comptroller Gallagher.
Sure. In Appendix A, where we're identifying the positions that must comply, yep. On page, I'm trying to find it now. Page two, the bottom of page two, in the Information Services Department, you know, we've created a new division, this Constituent Services Navigation Division, and there's a project director there who's the lead, mm-hmm. Who is not identified here.
I'm happy to add. It also could have been this. We could have gotten these recommendations before we actually created that position.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that too.
No objection.
This is Richie, the Williams County Assistant County Attorney. Just I'm in listening mode normally, but on page one, I will note at the bottom, Department of Budget and Innovation. Innovation should have three N's. Just throwing it out there.
Thank you. You know, as you can tell, we're very proud of our grammar, so we want to make sure we're caught when we're wrong. So can we go back? Thank you for adding that, Jay. I think that's a very good suggestion. Jay, do you want to go back to the top? Just so folks can see the little key there. You know, these are the ones with just a plain asterisk were additions that just per our changes to the law were added. The ones highlighted were additions based on the request of feedback. We reached out to, who was it, Jay? The executive's office, the sheriff, the comptroller, and the district attorney.
And the county clerk.
And the county clerk. And I know, March, you brought back one, which is noted below. And then the remaining, I think the sheriff said he was good. I don't know if we got any word back from the county clerk, and the ones highlighted then otherwise was mainly from the county executive. Comptroller Gallagher?
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't, this didn't come to mind earlier when Clerk Mahler sent this around. So I appreciate the opportunity to have commented sure. then. But USITA is not listed, and the Golden Hill Housing Corporation is not listed. And I think those definitely should be added here. You have board members making extremely complex financial decisions for the county, and they should be required.
I don't disagree. Do any other members have any concerns with that?
Well, can we require members of an LDC?
We require members of the IDA and the nonprofit arm of the IDA.
I mean, the IDA is created as a sub-county division by state law, though. These LDCs are not. I don't know. It's a question for attorneys, not me.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, you're going to have very, very expensive transactions being decided by people who have not filed.
I don't disagree with you. My point is that I'd like our attorneys to weigh in on the legality of that before we put it in.
Legislative Council or... Minority Council, do you guys have any immediate comment on that?
I don't have an immediate comment. I'm certainly happy to look into it. I think the comptroller raises a really good point. And if it's permitted legally, it would seem to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Do we just take a note to look into that prior to our next actual standing meeting this month?
Hey, John, I got about 5 minutes and then I'm going to have
to. I think, does anyone else have any issues with, I mean, I have no issues with the folks that the executive and who also the comptroller recommended as additions. I have no problem with that. There's no recommended subtractions from any of the folks. So I think we should be in agreement and we'll have counsel look into what I do think is a good suggestion. We just got to make sure we're allowed to do it. This would be important if we can do it, that we do it. So with that, the way I look at it, if it's okay with, this is also great, everyone. I'm impressed that we got through it the way we got through that. It's, for some of us, it's been a couple years, but it's been because of a lot of that work. So I think, you know, I would like to send this around, the current version, since we got through the law, the current version to the current legislature, since we do have a new legislature from the last time this was sent around. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a lot of time ahead of our standing committee meeting. And then add to the agenda of our standing committee meeting at the end, any actions, because again, we're already past resolution. If we want to put this in to get the ball rolling and public hearing and all that, you know, we got to wait till the March, you know, the next resolution deadline after February session. So I think this actually puts us in a good timeline after this successful meeting to get any input from, especially so the new folks can see it, if that's okay with the body. We can take up anything at the end of a standing meeting. And then at the end of that meeting, we can make the decision if we're all comfortable of putting that in during the resolution deadline following February session. If that sounds
just good. Just as a friendly reminder, you actually have a resolution in setting a public hearing last month. So you're already in. So if you want to postpone, you're welcome to postpone, but you do have a resolution in setting a public hearing currently before you.
We can take this up and we'll take no action until we go over this. And if we want to bring it back up and pass the public hearing next meeting, thank you for pointing out, we can do it. So we have options, but we're in a good place and we'll allow our colleagues to review. And I appreciate everyone's input tonight and comments. It was all very productive and positive. So again, thank you. And with that, motion to close.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.